So right here on the front row, I have all high school students?
Yes.
What year?
All gonna be juniors.
All gonna be juniors. So by the time you're a junior in high school, are your classes pretty much given to you, or are you picking some stuff at this point? So how much?
Three classes.
So, and you did that last?
You only gotta pick two.
Like, but do you do that at the end of the school year for next year?
Yeah.
So you, at the end of last year, you were picking up for this year. So what, how do you decide what you're gonna choose?
Depends on your career path and what credits you need to make.
So it depends on your career path. There are gonna be juniors in high school, and it depends on your career path. I admire your maturity. I'm not even sure I knew what a career path was when I was a junior in high school. But it gets to the point that there comes a point where we kind of go along for a while and we have the classes that we have. They just put us into classes. But as we get older, and clearly in high school it's happening, where they start to have choices about we're going to take this kind of class or we're going to take this kind of class. And some of it has to do with thinking, not just to next year in high school, but thinking to the future and thinking to, you know, what I want to do down the road, and trying to make those kinds of decisions. And it becomes increasingly complex as you continue on. Eliza, when it's time to be thinking about classes for the next semester, we have a ritual where she calls me and she'll say, I'm trying to decide. And what she means is, don't tell me anything about it and I don't want your opinion. But it sounds like she's saying, help me with these decisions and help me work through this and give me your opinion. But what she's really saying is, I want to talk out loud to someone for a while and them say nothing, and then I'll agree with them and I'll take the thing I want to take. But she does that each semester and it's been interesting to listen to her, because that's what you have to do, but to listen to her work her way through why she wants to choose these couple of classes. You know, maybe it's a professor that she has had and she enjoys. Maybe it's something that you know you have to plug in a certain number of classes in a certain area in order to satisfy that, and that's got to be done by graduation, and these are offered this semester, but then they won't come around again for another year and a half or something like that, to where, to be honest, I wouldn't be very helpful if I tried to offer suggestions anyways, because my mind starts to glaze over with all the variables that she's throwing in, but hopefully it's helpful to her. But the idea is that she is working towards something, and that there will come a point where that work will, if all the things are satisfied, will be completed, and then she'll be prepared to do some other thing, right? So she's doing all this work to get ready for some other sort of work down the way. Being a follower of Jesus can be viewed in a couple of ways. On the most fundamental level, and I hope this is the way that most people come to this, is it's basically a decision that I am going to follow Jesus. And then you follow Jesus. That glosses over how hard that can be to do at times, but the idea is not hard. That's a simple idea. I decide to follow Jesus, and then because I've decided to follow Jesus, I do it. It's hard because there's always something new to learn in the process of following Jesus. And more often than not, the things that we have to learn along the way are challenging things. They're difficult things. They're things that we may think we know something, but it turns out we know it in part, or we don't know it at all. Or there's a different way of thinking about things because now we're following Jesus rather than following our own idea of what we think we should be doing. So of those two ways, I would ask, which is right? Is it easy or is it hard? And I think that the answer, I hope that the one that's bubbling around in your mind is, it's both. It is easy to make the decision and to try to do it. It's hard to actually carry out the doing of it. And that's true from the very start of their being disciples. You read through the Gospels and you read about the 12 disciples, you will see that there is not a lot of complexity to getting Jesus walking up to some guys in a boat and saying, follow me. And then getting out of the boat and doing it. So at that level, that doesn't seem terribly hard at all. But we know more of the story, and we know what follows with those disciples as they try their best to follow Jesus, and how that has its ups and its downs and its places where they don't understand, so that they are doing two things at once. They are learning to follow Jesus at the same time that they are following Jesus. It wasn't as though Jesus said to them, follow me, and they said, okay, and Jesus said, I'll see you after you have 3 years of classes. They began immediately, and they learned to do it even as they are doing it. And it's not like they're doing it in kind of a junior sort of way. You're junior disciples, and then you're going to be disciples. They're disciples. From the moment they make the commitment that we're going with him, they're fully on board with him. But it doesn't mean that they understand everything about the task before them. And so we have this passage in Mark 6 this morning. And Mark 6 is kind of a lengthy chapter, and we just had a couple of short sections. And I want to back up to fill you in again to make this point that always it's a good idea to know what comes before a passage and what comes after a passage, especially if we have a passage on Sunday morning and you've got any kind of questions about that passage. One way to come at it or to unlock it a bit is to ask, what was going on prior to this? And then what did they do after this to put it in its larger framework? So this morning, Mark 6, at the beginning, and we read this a couple of weeks ago, but at the beginning of Mark 6, Jesus sends the 12 off to do ministry. Sends them off in pairs and says, go and do what we've been doing. Heal people, teach people, talk about me. This is what I want you to go do. And then after that, there's a lengthy section where it's talking about how John the Baptist ends up executed, and John's followers come and talk with Jesus. And that isn't just a thing that happens. You have to understand how unnerving, well, one, how sad it is for the disciples, because in a way you're talking about a co-worker. I don't sense that there was so much competition as there was a sense of we're both doing ministry. So there's probably some sense of camaraderie. This is a relative of Jesus. And at the same time, they can see the parallel. You know, this is John's disciples with John, and John's disciples come and say John was executed, and he wasn't just executed for some random reason. He was executed for doing what Jesus is doing, being in ministry in the community there. So you can imagine that this is not just a piece of information to them. This is stress-inducing information. They're sad and they're stressed by this news. So you have disciples who have been sent out on mission, have been working on that mission, and they come back, and what they come back to is this news about John. And then we pick up where the passage begins this morning, and in that first passage, Jesus greets them back, and they're all excited. It sounds like they're all excited about what they've done and what's happened and the things they've been able to do, and they're probably a little surprised by the deeds of power that they have been able to do because they've been working through the power of Christ, dealing with people, healing people. They're excited. And they come back and they're kind of wound up, and they're also kind of torn up about what's going on with John. And Jesus says this to them. He says, come by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while. What a great invitation that must have sounded like to them. Like to recognize all of a sudden, you know, I am tired. This was exhausting work. This was exhilarating work. But even when you do exhilarating work, you can end up exhausted at the end of it. And maybe it's not even until that moment when Jesus says, come away, that they recognize, wow, look, I really do need to do that. And that invitation is exactly the thing I needed to hear. Then in the second part of today's reading, the second set of verses that we read, there's just a quick, good overview of the ministry that Jesus was about. And as a because they're with him, the ministry that the disciples were about. Jesus is busy all the time. You read through these verses and you can't help but get that sense of Jesus being busy all the time. They're bringing people from all over the place for him to heal, to touch, who just want, they don't even need him to touch them. They're just trying to get him close enough to where the sick person can reach out and grab hold of the hem of his garment. Imagine if you can't walk around your village, your town, without people trying to reach out and touch you because there's power flowing from you. That's Jesus' life, and that's the life that the disciples have bought into. So he's busy all the time, and his followers are busy all the time. The needs that they are confronted with are constant. And the needs they are confronted with are many. Ever since we've had the food pantry outside, one of the constant conversations that I've been a part of and overheard are, it's empty all the time. Is anybody filling it up? And I know there are multiple people filling it up, and yet the food goes out again. And it is because, in that sense, the circumstance hasn't changed. The needs are constant and many. There's two things side by side in this scripture passage. Jesus and his followers have plenty to do. It's not like they have a little bit to do and then lots of downtime. They have plenty to do. They could stay busy constantly. They could never stop doing things, and they would still have things to do. The second piece, though, which is really important to pay attention to, is the bit that came at the beginning of the first section of verses we read this morning, that invitation from Jesus. So they're busy all the time, and they could be busy even more. They could be constantly busy, and yet Jesus says to them, step away from it. Don't get so sucked into that you can't stop doing it, that you run yourself into the ground to the point where you are useless to anyone, because now you are so broken down from doing things that you are more in line for the need group than the group that's able to help because of where you've worked yourself to. And so Jesus' invitation to them is to step away. What that means is that I believe Jesus recognized that two things were going on with his followers. One is that they were constantly being built. They were constantly growing. There was always something more that they needed to add to their repertoire, to their what they were able to do, to their skill set, to their knowledge and their understanding of who Jesus was. They're never going to be completed with that. And so they're always growing as disciples. They are always being built as disciples. At the same time, while they're always being built, they're always building. There's never a time where there's this decision you have to do one or the other. They're always doing both of those things. It isn't as though you have to be built and be built and be built, and then there's a certificate at which point you can start building. From the moment Jesus extends the invitation, follow me, they have their hard hats. They are builders at that point as well. And so that recognition for them and recognition for us that, see if this seems familiar at all. I know I have said things along this line, and I've heard this kind of thought expressed over time. Someday when I'm blank, I'll do blank. There's conditions on these things. Someday when I'm old enough, then I'll do this thing. Someday when I have enough resources, I would really like to do this. Someday when I've got enough education, when I've learned enough, when I've done this thing enough, once I know this, then I'll be able to do this. So basically, when I am ready, then I will do this thing that I want to do that I've been putting off. That resonate in any way. I feel like that is a common part of who we are, oftentimes about things we're really drawn to, or that maybe God is really drawing us to. And yet there's a part of us that starts coming up with reasons why it's not possible. So we come up with that way of thinking about it. Well, when these things happen, then I'll do this. Now, there's sometimes when it's absolutely true that you have to do that. I don't want my surgeon just to decide to be a surgeon. Yeah, I'm a surgeon, come on in, I can fix your back. No, I want to know that there's been some work done there and that they've studied and learned how to be a surgeon. So sometimes it's necessary. But sometimes there's a different word than necessary. Sometimes it is called procrastination. It is called finding reasons not to do something that you're really drawn to, that God is actually calling you to. But whether it's fear or uncertainty or a feeling that we don't have the skill for it, we choose to find reasons not to be able to do it at that time. There are times when we just simply honestly don't believe we are ready to do the thing that we feel like we ought to do, want to do, or called to do. Being a follower of Jesus does not come with a someday when you're ready component. Just repeat that. Being a follower of Jesus does not come with a someday when you're ready component. Being a follower of Jesus is truly as simple as follow me and then you do it. I mean, following means that there's somebody who's going somewhere and we're trying to follow after them. And if we choose to say, I want to follow you, but I'm going to need to do this, this, and this before I do it, and that person's on the move, when we look up and say, I'm ready, where is the person? Gone somewhere else. Being a follower of Jesus does not come with a someday component. When we follow Jesus, we learn to be disciples even at the same time we are helping to make disciples. We do both at once. That's being a part and parcel of being a disciple is making disciples. Jesus, at the last moments there with his friends before he ascends to the heavens, says, go into the world and make disciples. He doesn't give them a timeline or a list of things they need to do in advance. He says, go into the world and make disciples. Towards this end, whenever I'm out in a group and somebody asks me to do this, I'm always a little wary, but I want you to turn to the person next to you, pick somebody beside you, and say to that person, I am a work in progress. Now, I want you to affirm that person by telling them this. I want you to say, you are a work in progress. That hurt? That is true. That's what we are. We are works in progress. Each one of us, and some of us are going to surge today. You know, today's going to be a really good day for us. And for others, it's not going to be such an awesome day. But together, each one of us is a work in progress. Jesus does invite us to come away to a quiet place. After that that passing of the peace, I should be wary of having moments where I ask you to talk to each other. come back. If you are tired, if you are burnt out, if you are worn out, what Jesus wants you to do is pay attention to that. Jesus doesn't want you to ignore it and say, I can fight my way through this. Jesus wants you to pay attention to that and hear that invitation. Come away to a quiet place. Come away to a secluded place and rest for a while. Jesus wants us to take the time to study, to share with one another, to fellowship together, to grow, to have time for ourselves, and have time for ourselves in the presence of God, alone with God. But not forever. Jesus doesn't want us to go away to a cave and stay there necessarily. Not until something is perfect, and then we'll be ready. Jesus wants to care for ourselves and to grow as disciples while we are working as disciples. doing both. Care for ourselves as disciples, and at the same time, continue to be at work as disciples. All that time in the Gospels, when the disciples are getting so much wrong, I mean, like, if we had to characterize the disciples in the Gospels, we would probably talk about them as, well, they seem like not to get what Jesus is talking about a lot of the time. And they seem to make mistakes a good bit of the time. But to totally characterize them that way would overlook moments like this when Jesus says, y'all go out in pairs and do what I've been teaching you. And they come back and they're so they're excited to the point of overflowing with the joy of what they've been doing. Clearly, they're getting some things right. Clearly, they're already on the way towards becoming more and more of what it is God is calling them to do. They're ministering right alongside of Jesus. It's not Jesus and the 12 anchors that he's dragging around, keeping him from doing even more than he could have done without them. It's Jesus and the 12 disciples, his 12 friends, who exponentially increase the impact of Jesus by being sent, by going forth and following Jesus' instructions, by being there to facilitate the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus includes them in that process to go around the Galilee and meet needs. That second half of the scripture today, if you go back and reread that, you just have this sense of there's so much to do. It's like if there was a doctor's office in a community and all the people go there, except that everywhere you go, that's where the doctor's office is. That's what it feels like for Jesus and the disciples. We are not called to be Jesus. You should receive that as good news. We are not called to be Jesus. We are called to be like Jesus as much as we are able. So we're called to follow and to see what the Master does and to emulate that work as much as possible. There's different versions of this next saying. I like this one, that the church has been described as a place where one thirsty person who has found water goes out and tells other thirsty people that there's water. That it doesn't deny that each one of us is thirsty, but it also says that we recognize we're part of a world where there's a lot of thirsty people. And so once we find it, we can't help but say, I have the answer to what you need, and this is where you can find it, and I invite you to go there. Hilda's not here this morning. I wasn't sure if she would be or not, but she's on the path towards feeling better. But there was a moment this week where she illustrated this thing I've been talking about of being a disciple in the sense of being open to learning and growing, and at the same time being a disciple in terms of teaching, so that Hilda, when she is here, she's the Sunday school teacher, and she is a tremendous Sunday school teacher for the adult Sunday school class. And when I was visiting with her this week, and she said, I really want people to come to Sunday school this fall. I was looking at the new material for Sunday school, and it's fantastic. It's so good. And so she starts talking about what's in the material and what she's learning from reading the material. And I'm thinking, if she's learning from it, there's certainly something there that I can learn from it, because she knows all of it. And yet the thing that she's excited about is what she's drawing from it. But the way that excitement works itself out is she's like, I want more people to come and join with us in this so we can share that. So we can exponentially again increase the number of folks who are growing in their discipleship. We'll have Vacation Bible School this week. And we will have, oftentimes it works out that we have about as many adults as we have children, and that ratio almost works for us. You know, we end up, when we talk about coming away to a quiet place, that's all the adults at the end of Bible school wanting to go away to a quiet place. But there will be no perfect disciples helping with Vacation Bible School. There will be many faithful disciples helping with Vacation Bible School. There will be no perfect disciples helping with Marty's Kitchen a week from tomorrow. There will be many faithful disciples helping with Marty's Kitchen a week from tomorrow. There will be no perfect disciples being present for friends who are struggling, friends who are trying to find their way. There'll be no perfect disciples sharing their faith in a world that there's a need for that invitation and that need for those activities that disciples do. There'll be no perfect disciples that I know doing that, but there will be many faithful disciples. God is not calling us to become perfect and then be disciples. God is calling us to follow, and in our following, be faithful disciples. Thanks be to God who calls us both to rest and to service, and who, most importantly, calls us to be disciples and to make disciples. Thanks be to God. Amen.